Hello, my friends. We are entering the 1955 Kahlua Study Series, Chapter 33, The Principles Every Infinite Way Student Must Know. Now, I suspect that there are enough here to keep us going for a while, but after this chapter, we only have 7 more to go. So let's just see how this unfolds and how many talks this particular chapter takes. Before we get going, I want to say how wonderful this has been for me. I knew when I had this book open in my lap in Myrtle Beach, listening to the waves, sitting out on the deck, that this message needed to get out, that it had the capacity to bring people from the letter of truth to the spirit of truth. And now it's starting to get out there, and the first spark of inspiration I had a year ago, almost, is now a living manifestation, and it's quite wonderful to me. And I hope you are making progress in your several periods a day of getting quiet. I hope you're making contact, feeling that inner movement or quickening, or perhaps even a flooding of the presence. But let's get going in this chapter. What every student of the Infinite Way must know. Well, first he says we must know why we meditate. And I suppose that we know that. If I was to ask everyone in here, why are we supposed to meditate in the Infinite Way, or in our spiritual life, you would all be able to say, to make the contact. Let's see what he says. He says, where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. And where the Spirit of the Lord isn't, there is slavery, bondage, and limitation. Now, ordinarily, in religious circles and in metaphysical circles, many people walk around saying or thinking, where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. And that may serve to calm them down for a little while, but it doesn't bring the Spirit of the Lord, does it? So he says, when you ask, where is the Spirit of the Lord, and some metaphysical cliche comes through a person's lips, and they say, everywhere. The Spirit of the Lord is everywhere. That isn't true. The Spirit of the Lord isn't everywhere. The Spirit of the Lord is only where it is realized. That's the only place it is. If the Spirit of the Lord were everywhere, everybody would be free. They would be healthy, wealthy, independent, joyous, harmonious. So the Spirit of the Lord is only where it is realized. If you cannot realize or feel the actual presence of God, then so far as you are concerned, it isn't there. And I have, in my life experience, and you probably do too, a perfect demonstration of that principle. I can walk around thinking, where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty, and experience lack and limitation, and slavery and bondage. unhappiness, depression. Yet, the reverse is true too. When you make that contact, which he's trying to lead us all to, and make it consistently, then you are contacting the Spirit of the Lord. And then, through that contact, you experience health, wealth, and joyous, harmonious living. Now, a couple things here. Do you understand what the Spirit of the Lord is? By that, I don't mean, can you give me an explanation of it? I mean, do you understand that we use words to describe a transcendental presence? And some of them are interchangeable. In the old days, they said, where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. Several thousand years later, they said, I live, yet not I, but Christ liveth. The Spirit and Christ are one and the same. It's the same presence, the same transcendental presence. And a couple of thousand years later, we say, consciousness is what I am. So we have Spirit, Christ, consciousness. These are all the same. If you go into meditation and you become quiet and receptive, and the Spirit of the Lord moves through you, you experience a transcendental presence. If you become still inside and you feel Christ is risen, you have experienced a transcendental presence. And if you become so still that you rise up over the mind and consciousness reveals itself, you have experienced a transcendental presence. So the Spirit of God, the Christ of God, is your own consciousness. Spirit, Christ, consciousness. It's all the same. So the words that we use to describe it are pretty meaningless, really, unless they point you to the way where you can experience it. And then it doesn't matter what term you use. It doesn't matter at all. What matters is the surrender where it can use you, where it can live itself, where you appear to be. So, you may use Spirit, Christ, consciousness, or I. Or you may use nothing. The important point is that you become a transparency, an avenue of awareness, so that this Spirit can function. If you cannot realize or feel the actual presence of it, then, so far as you are concerned, it isn't there. And that pretty much explains most of humanity. So as far as you and I are concerned, the Spirit of the Lord is wherever it is realized, wherever it is felt. And I just felt it at the beginning of that sentence. So for me, the Spirit of the Lord is right here, right now. The whole secret of it lies in the word consciousness. If you are conscious of the presence of the Lord, if you are conscious of the activity of God, if you are consciously aware of a divine presence, then it is so unto you. But it is not so for your neighbor or your friend or your relative or your spouse or your partner. Now, I had this conversation the other day online. Two people can be sitting on a park bench. One person can be consciously feeling this presence, and the person sitting next to them can not feel this presence. Now, if you're standing 12 feet away looking at that bench and noticing those two people, you could say, reading from the Bible, that the Spirit of the Lord is everywhere. But that wouldn't be true. One person has the conscious feel of it, one person does not. And the difference is that the person that has the conscious feel of it experiences, what did he say here? Health, wealth, independent, joyous, harmonious living. And the person that does not experience it, does not feel it, experiences slavery, bondage, and limitation. And the person that does experience it could turn suddenly to the person sitting next to them and say, "Oh, did you just feel that?" And that person, of course, would have no idea what they're talking about, because they would be speaking in tongues. That's what speaking in tongues is, a language that only those who have experienced this presence can understand. Because you and I could be sitting there, and we would be able to answer, "Yes. Isn't it wonderful? We have an underground. We speak in tongues." Anyway, that is why we reach out to practitioners and teachers for help. The Spirit of the Lord is right where the patient is, so why should they reach out to anyone for help? And the reason is that the Spirit of the Lord isn't realized. It isn't felt. So they turn to one who has that developed capacity to realize God. If you can contact the consciousness of a Jesus Christ, harmony is instantly restored to you. But if you were to contact one of the rabbis of the synagogue or one of the ministers of the church, you would be right where you were before, except that you might get a little human comfort or sympathy. But you wouldn't have your demonstration of health, harmony, wholeness, completeness, and perfection, because in but few cases is there a realized God consciousness. This brings up the question, why does that contact with the Spirit, which is an invisible presence, why does that result in a demonstration of harmony? Why does it result in a demonstration of health, wholeness, completeness, and perfection? Is it like Aladdin's lamp? We rub this bottle and make contact with the genie inside, and he grants our wishes, or he transforms this material creation and makes it, changes it from disharmony to harmony. It's important that we understand why, when we make that contact, harmony does appear. It's important also that we understand that we don't have Aladdin's lamp. The reason making that contact results in harmony is because the disharmony is in the mind. No illusion is ever externalized. Only the Spirit of God is here. But we don't see the Spirit of God. We don't feel the Spirit of God when we are in the mind. It's just like having a picture in a magazine that someone's taken a crayon, and a dark crayon, and drawn back and forth to cover the picture. The Spirit of God is here. Only the Spirit of God is here. Only that presence is here. But we see through a glass darkly. We are in the mind, and we see the mental images. All right. When we go into our meditation, and we rest back, or rise above, or are lifted up over the mind, in one way or another we step out of the mind, if only for a moment, the glass darkly is not there, and we catch a glimpse of that which is. We catch a glimpse of the presence, of Spirit, of Christ, of consciousness, of I, of it. When we catch that glimpse, it dissolves the mental images in the mind. Not all of them, or you'd be instantaneously and forever God realized. But some of them. It gets lighter. And so now harmony appears. You're not yet seeing only the Spirit of God. But some of those darker mental images have been dissolved, and you're seeing a lighter glass darkly. And it's appearing as harmony now instead of disharmony. Eventually, you won't see harmony or disharmony. You will see only Spirit. Do we see how that works? It's been compared to standing in the darkness and someone turns on a light, perhaps a flashlight, and suddenly you can see what you never saw before. All around you, the furniture, the walls, the windows, the doors. It's still not fully lit up. There's still plenty of shadows. Still not sure what that is in the corner over there. But it's not totally dark now. It's like that. And so on the way to standing in the middle of Spirit in a spiritual universe and seeing and feeling Spirit everywhere all the time, on the way to that consciousness, that state of consciousness, that much of awareness, we have these experiences where we make the contact, and disharmony dissolves and harmony appears in its place. If we could do it in one giant leap, not only would disharmony dissolve, but harmony would dissolve as well. And there would be nothing there but Spirit as the only identity, as the only presence, as the only power, as the only life. But that might be too much of a shock to do that all at once. And so we're given this spiritual path and the art of meditation so that we may slowly dissolve the images in the human mind or the glass darkly. And that's why harmony appears, as I see it. If you contact a practitioner or teacher of realized God consciousness, it makes no difference whether it's Infinite Way, Christian Science, or even Catholic or Buddhist. If they have the realized God consciousness, which we understand now to be the awareness of this transcendental presence, and you contact them, then you are going to benefit. Why? Why? Why does that work that way? Well, you know, it's because it's based on whether or not they have attained God consciousness. But still, you must ask yourself, well, I ask myself, why does that work that way? And the answer comes back because there's only one transcendental presence. When you achieve that awakening, achieve's the wrong word. When you experience that awakening, a complete awakening, you won't see spirit, every person on this planet having their own spirit or their own Christ. There won't be 4 billion Christ walking around. You will experience one transcendental presence because that's all there is. And so you will see it and know it as your presence and his presence and her presence because there's only one presence and I am that. And that's the way it will reveal itself. Because there's only one. So, if you are unable to make contact within yourself and experience that transcendental presence that dissolves the mental image, if you call up a teacher or a practitioner and they make the contact, it's the same transcendental presence that's within your consciousness. You have contacted the same transcendental presence which dissolves the mental images. It doesn't matter whether you contact it here or 40 feet away. It's omnipresence. It's the same presence. That's why it works. So, it must be someone with the ability to be consciously aware of spirit. Meditation in and of itself won't do anything for anyone except in proportion as meditation enables you to make your contact. We meditate many, many times a day, but we do it for one purpose. The purpose of attaining God realization. We may not attain it at the moment of our meditation. Yes, this is important. This has happened to me a lot. This happened to me today. I went into meditation and I couldn't seem to make the contact. I got still enough, but there was no conscious feel of it. And I know if I haven't felt it, I haven't made the contact. But what happened was, I know from experience and from reading what Joel experienced that sometimes while you're sitting there, you don't make the contact. And yet, because you have opened the door to receptivity to that transcendental presence, you get up and you do other things, and the door is still open, and it flows through half an hour later. And you're just sitting there, maybe preparing a meal, and then suddenly you feel the presence come upon you the way I did when I started this talk today. So he says, we may not attain it at the moment of our meditation. You just don't sit there and wait until you are convinced that you have attained it unless you are trying to help someone in a very desperate plight. Now, that's happened to me also. Someone called and said that they were, or they wrote an email and said that they had this ongoing problem and they weren't getting any relief, and that concerned me. And when I sat down to meditate, I had the hardest time to make that contact, to get free from the thoughts and things of this world so I could make that contact. And I wrestled with it and wrestled with it and kept saying, no, get out of my mind. I'm not thinking about that. No answer to this, and so on and so forth. And then I wrestled. I'd open my eyes, take a little break, go back to it. Finally, it seemed like forever, which was probably less than an hour, finally I felt it just flood my being. But I tell you, sometimes I felt it necessary to do that because of the desperate plight of the person that contacted me. But otherwise, if it's just to have my daily 12 times a day and I don't make the contact, then I don't worry about it because sometimes it comes a few minutes later. All right, so you just don't sit there and wait until you are convinced that you have attained it unless you are trying to help someone in a very desperate plight. If you had a patient who, to human sense, was dying or was in insufferable pain, then you should feel the responsibility to sit there until you attain that realization, even if you have to neglect housework or business or anything else, or even if you have to sit up all night. You owe that to yourself, to the Christ, to your patient, not to take things for granted. And so if they were in that desperate plight, you would sit by or stand by until you had an absolute inner awareness, it's all right, God is on the field. Otherwise, in your 12 times a day, you do not have to sit there and wait for that. You have to sit there your 3, 4, or 5 minutes, opening yourself to that, and then go on about your business. Because in doing that frequently during the day, the actual click or contact may come 10 minutes later, 20 minutes later, or an hour later. It may come after you've had a night's sleep. And so I can testify to that. He's telling the truth. That has also been my experience. Now, he says, I awakened this morning with the realization or contact after quite a few hours of sleep. But as I awakened, I found myself in it. But you see, it had been the meditations of last night, the meditations of yesterday, all added together. And then I went to sleep, and in my complete relaxation was enabled to have that contact realized. And so it will be, you may meditate in the morning before you start your day's work, and then an hour later, all of a sudden find yourself right out in the middle of the Spirit. Now when we read things like that, when I read things like that, he said here, I awakened and found myself in it. And he said here, you find yourself right out in the middle of Spirit an hour later. When I read things like that, I stop and say, well, what does that mean? What does he mean? What's the experience of that? Have I had that experience? And yes, I have. I just explained it to you. What is it? Finding yourself out in the middle of it. It makes me ask myself that question. What is in the middle of Spirit? What would that be like? What does he mean by that? Now, if you have made the contact by sitting down and meditating one of your 12 periods a day, then you know what it feels like to find yourself freed, momentarily freed from the thoughts and things of this world, and resting back in the middle of it, in the middle of Spirit, while you have a conscious awareness of it flowing. So what he's saying is, You may sit down to meditate several times. Nothing seems to come. And then the next thing you know, you're walking down the shopping aisle. You reach for a box of cereal. And wham! It just floods you. I don't know why that works that way, but it does sometimes. And you smile that smile. You have your secret in the middle of the grocery store. And you know you're God-governed. And it's beautiful. So the purpose of meditation is God contact. And if the opportunity so presents itself to you, you may sit and wait in meditation until you've realized that contact. Ordinarily, that isn't wise because if you sit more than 4, 5, or 6 minutes, the waiting is apt to be a mental strain. And you'll never get it while there's a mental strain. Oh, for those of you who know, isn't that the truth? It's only in the moment that ye think not that the bridegroom cometh. It's only in the moment that thought is still. It is only in the moment that there is no mental strain that the God contact is realized. Oh, how true that is. As long as we're wrestling with something, it's not going to happen. And when he says, only at a moment ye think not, that does not mean sit down, close your eyes, and force every thought out of your mind. That's a mental strain. It's not going to come that way. That's why he's given us contemplation. That's why he said it's permissible, even in this class, to have something like, thy grace is my sufficiency in all things, or not my will be done, but thy will be done, or where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. Something like that to contemplate a couple times. And then relax back in each word as you're looking at it. Relax into each word. Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. And you rest in that word. You rest. It's like that. It's not, where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. Now get out of here, you thoughts. I'm trying to be quiet. You see, there's a difference. Alright, so it won't happen if there's a mental strain. And so it is, you can sit quietly and peacefully contemplating a verse such as, thy grace is my sufficiency. Okay, I guess he's going to repeat what I just said. Okay. You can contemplate that for 3 or 4 or 5 minutes and sit for a minute or so in complete quiet. But then get up and go about your business, because otherwise you'll get into a mental state or a mental strain. And God does not come through where there's reasoning, thinking process going on. It's only when that is set aside. I love that. I underlined that, circled that, made a note in the margin saying important. God does not come through where there's a reasoning, thinking process going on. Now, all these people online that say they have to depend on their reason, the God of reason, must know that God does not come where there's reasoning. This is so backwards from what the human being wants to believe. Human being would like to put the God of reason up there in control. Yeah, we see where that's gotten us. All right. That's why inventors and composers may think about their work for a while. They may sit up and plan and give thought to it, but then they retire, go to sleep, or rest, or take their mind off it. And then when their mind is completely distracted, the answer comes popping right into them. And that happens with our work in the same way. The moment the mind is off of the subject, then that mind which was also in Christ Jesus is on the field. So, the moment reasoning, thinking is off the subject, then the mind which was also in Christ Jesus is on the field. You see that? That's why he says you are to say to yourself when confronted with the discord, no answer to this. You're speaking to your reasoning, thinking mind, which is the one manufacturing the picture in the first place. So you say to it, no answer to this. I'm not going to reason about it or think about it. I'm dropping that. Now speak, Lord. And in the stillness, that mind which was also in Christ Jesus is on the field. We see that? All right, we're already 36 minutes into this talk, and we're only up to the first principle of this chapter. So it doesn't look like we're going to get race right through these. Among the things that we must know, and these are not in the order of their importance, they're just the way that I wrote them down, there are certain things that we all must know. One is this. The secret of harmonious living is the development of spiritual consciousness, or the conscious awareness of spirit is another way to say that. Now, this is beautiful. This is so beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. What is spiritual consciousness? Now, if you were to take a test on that, what would you write down? What is spiritual consciousness? Well, let's see. That's the conscious awareness of spirit, right? What he says is, when the invisible is more real to us than the visible. Gosh, folks, circle that. Put a star next to it. Underline it. Exclamation point. Print it off somewhere. Stick it up above your monitor. Put it on your forehead. We just said earlier, a few minutes ago, eventually you will get to the place where there is no glass darkly, and you will see, have the conscious awareness of spirit everywhere. Now, spirit, as we know, is invisible. The Word was made invisible flesh and dwells among us. So that invisible spirit is right here, right now, amongst us, all of us. But we don't see it. We see these mental images, the visible things, the discords, the inharmony, the harmony, the good, the bad, the young, the old, the well, the sick, the poor, the wealthy, the cold, the hot, the time, the space, the evil, the good. That's the visible. Spirit is invisible. You can't see spirit with your eyes, but you can feel it. You can discern it. You can even hear it. You can touch it and be touched by it. But it's invisible. So spiritual consciousness is, if you're going to develop spiritual consciousness, and we're all on this path to develop it, if we are to develop spiritual consciousness, we are going to develop a state of awareness, each of us now, walking down the street, driving our car, sitting at home, attending a class, attending a job, each of us will have the awareness where the invisible is more real to us than the visible. That is such a big fat clue. You take that into your closet and look at it backwards and forwards and up and down and sideways and deep into it, and let it enter deep into you. You must have that state of awareness where the invisible is more real than the visible. The invisible has ways that ye know not of. When you no longer fear a person, which is the visible, or a condition, which is the visible, when you no longer fear a person or a condition, in the realization that your life is governed now entirely by the infinite invisible. Then, well, then you're developing spiritual consciousness, aren't you? The ability to actually have realization that man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of God, is spiritual consciousness. Or to have the awareness that thy grace is my sufficiency. What he's saying is, we are going to reach the place where we understand we are living by that invisible transcendental presence we contact in our meditation and sometimes while just walking around. We're going to have the actual awareness that we live by that and not by anything that's visible. To know where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty, and then to spend the entire time attaining the awareness of the Spirit of the Lord, that would be another height of spiritual consciousness. Here on the next page, he says, a righteous man means a man of spiritual consciousness, a man who depends on the infinite invisible in any and every situation in life. Now, you've heard me say online before and in certain talks that you've got to give up your love of mother, brother, sister, father, son, grandson, daughter, granddaughter, and all that, and how hard that is for people to accept. But listen to what he's saying. See if this does not say that I am right, that Christ is right when he says you must leave all for me. If we, walking this path, must attain the awareness that the invisible is more real to us than the visible, if we must get to the place where we realize we're living by this invisible that we contact, if we must get to the place where we have the awareness that this invisible presence is the only presence, and that this infinite invisible is what exists everywhere simultaneously. In other words, if we must get to the place where the visible glass darkly is dropping, and we're looking at the invisible, resting in it, resting in this sea of invisible spirit, loving it with all our heart, mind, and soul. If the visible must dissolve so we can live in the invisible, well, you know you can't hang on to what you can see, hear, taste, touch, and smell, and at the same time have the awareness of the invisible. You know surely one must go so the other may take its place. Surely you must know you have to die completely to this world. Now, it doesn't mean you're going to shut yourself in a little cave up in the Himalayas somewhere and close your eyes and pretend that nothing is here. It doesn't mean you will stop loving these people. Well, yes, it does in one sense. Because what it means is you will be looking through them and loving the invisible that's animating them. You will still see them, but you will see through them and be really head over heels in love with the invisible presence that permeates them. And the day will come when they will dissolve completely, and there will be nothing there but that invisible presence. It will still be appearing as all these forms, but you will no longer take the forms seriously. You will just be so in love with the presence. But anyway, let's see. So the next question is, how do we develop the spiritual consciousness? And the answer is through the activity of truth and consciousness. But we know that an activity of truth and consciousness is not sitting down and thinking thoughts about truth. Now we understand an activity of truth and consciousness is when that spirit, when we make that contact, and that spirit, the only truth, moves through us. That activity of that spirit is an activity of truth. When we, through meditation, come to that place where we are able to receive truth from within us, where we are receptive and responsive to the truth that wells up from within us, we do not think it, read it, or hear it up here in the mind. But those steps we have developed, through those steps, we have developed the inner ear and the inner eye, and we become aware now of the impartation of the word from God. We hear the still small voice. That is the most important phase of the activity of truth and consciousness. When truth is coming to our consciousness from within our own being. The first step, that the one that leads us to a state of consciousness where we can be receptive and responsive, is where we read, study, hear. So all those years that any student has spent doing that, reading, hearing, and thinking, are not wasted, because they lead us to this Sky Lewis study series, where we can begin to move from that letter to the spirit, to the actual experience of the spirit. So all those years are fruitful in leading us to that second and most important step where the inspiration flows from within our own being. After that, if we wish, we can still go to a service, a lecture, a class. We can still read books, but that's not our dependency. That's just our pleasure now, for the purpose of association. Now, meditation, of course, and you have your stages of meditation. He says you have your initial stages when you are pondering, cogitating, contemplating God and the spiritual universe. But then you have our stage where we're at, where we go within and become still and make the contact. We do less pondering and more listening. He says, if we had a task to do, and we all have, just living 24 hours a day is a task, if we were occasionally to remember, he performeth that which is given me to do, he perfect that which concerneth me, then we could just smile a bit and let the weight drop off our shoulder and say, oh, thank heaven there is a he. So that's the correct use of a scriptural quotation. Now, again, walking around making affirmations, of course, we know is in the realm of the mind. And it's the very mind that's creating these mental images. So the mind can't free us from the mind. It can't free us from the thoughts and things of this world. But we can trick the mind through contemplating that scripture, reaching a place of stillness where we can make the contact. And the contact with that transcendental presence is what frees us from the mind and its mental images, from the thoughts and things of this world. But we know that. We're just repeating. So, how do you know if you're just making an affirmation or if you're using it the way he's suggesting you use it to get still? Aha! That's a good question. And the answer is, when you're just using it as an affirmation, and you're repeating it to yourself several times a day, nothing will happen within. You'll still be on the level of the mind. But when you've said it once or twice, and you've blinked your eyes or closed your eyes, and experienced that contact, there will be a release. That's the key. You will experience a release from the thoughts and things of this world. A weight will fall off your shoulders, and you'll know, ah, yes, thank you, Father. You'll know you've made the contact. All right, so you see the difference? If it leads to the inner release, you're right on track. If it just leads to repeating these things over and over, you're missing the mark. So we have passages like the 8th chapter of Romans. We should all know those passages and realize only if the Spirit of God dwells in us are we the sons of God. Only. If the Spirit of God is not dwelling in us, we are mortals. And mortals means death, of death. We are men and women of death if the Spirit of God does not dwell in us. That's pretty, maybe we want to just race over that. I don't want to race over that. I want to look at each sentence. I want to look at each, what does that mean? And so when I'm reading this, I stop there and I say, wow. If I'm not making this contact, then I am a man of death. I'm of death. Jesus was right. I'm the walking dead. I'm a corpse walking around. I know that's kind of gross, but I need to look at this seriously. I need to take it seriously. For the wages of the flesh are death, says Paul. And so if I'm just living in the flesh and I'm enjoying myself and I'm raising my family and I'm going to work and I'm having my moments of rest and vacation and I'm enjoying my pizza and a movie on Friday night and I'm having sex 3 times a week and I'm, getting in the hot tub when I need to and I'm having steak several nights and lobster one night. Well, all that catering to the flesh, ladies and gentlemen, does not make you a bad person. This has nothing to do with being good or bad. The spiritual life has nothing to do with being good or bad. All of that is sprung out of religion that did not understand. You can stop doing all those things and wear a coat and quietly wrap a little hair shirt under there for your humility and cause yourself suffering. And you know what? You're no closer to the kingdom of heaven than the guy who's living in Las Vegas and having 3 women a night in an orgy and drinking himself and drugging himself and gambling himself to death. You're no closer, no closer, no closer. Isn't that something? Isn't that something? That's just something when you think about it. All the years, thousands of years of religion tried to sell us that. But it has nothing to do with that. It doesn't have anything to do with that. What he meant by the wages of living in the flesh were death, and what Jesus meant was by you are the walking dead, there's no life in the mind. There's no life in a mental image. I am the life. Spirit is the life. And the only life. And so if you're not making contact with the life called Spirit, the only life there is, the only life that God made, this invisible Spirit, if you're not making contact with that, you are a corpse. You might be a corpse acting good, you might be a corpse acting bad, but you're still a corpse. There's no life in you. So when I read this, I go, whoa, I am a man of death. Ah, but if I'm making contact with the Spirit, if so be that the Spirit of God dwells in me, then I'm not a mortal. I'm the Son of God. I am the expression of that Spirit. There is life in me. That eternal life is in me. I'm alive, like Frankenstein. He's alive. Yes, I'm alive. I have the Spirit, that transcendental presence. The Spirit of the living God, and I am alive with that Spirit. Now I'm not a corpse. I'm not the walking dead. I'm the living child of God, offspring of God, if so be that that Spirit dwells in me. So you see, it's very important. It has nothing to do with being good or bad. It has to do with making the contact or not. You see that? Now, when you make that contact, only harmony and love and blessing and darshan can flow through you. So, in that sense, only good can flow through you. You won't be able to go to Las Vegas and live on wine and women and song. Not because you've decided to be good, because that won't bring you any closer, but because as the Spirit enters, those things fall away. The mental images are dissolved. So you see, it never was about trying to change from being a bad person, carnally minded, you sinner, you. How dare you drink that whiskey? Yeah, it never was about trying to become a good person. That won't get you into the kingdom of heaven. It is about making the contact, and then the old person is dissolved. It drops away. Not because you tried to do anything, but because now you're not a living corpse living in the flesh. Now you have risen above that, and you are the living Spirit of God made manifest. See that? Please, let's drop all this religious nonsense. So how do we know if the Spirit of God is dwelling in us? How do we know? Well, if we are opening ourselves to the Spirit of God, then it's dwelling in us. The Spirit of the Lord actually is nowhere except where you realize it, where you feel it. All right. We got through the very first principle in this chapter. And there are 10 principles in this chapter. So we didn't get very far today. And yet, perhaps we did. Got just far enough. So next week, we'll pick up chapter 33. Principles which every Infinite Way student must know, and we'll go with principle number 2. Since I and the Father are one, all that the Father has is mine. But I suspect you know now that statement's not true either. All these statements need to be amended. Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. Should be where the Spirit of the Lord is realized, felt, where you're consciously aware of it, it dissolves the disharmony and reveals harmony, more of itself appearing. And I and the Father are one, so all that the Father has in mine is mine. Should also be amended to, since I and the Father are one, and I feel that oneness in my meditation, then I rest back, and all that the Father has begins to manifest. Right? Right. Okay. So, that's it for today, my friends. I love you, and we're getting closer and closer to that Christmas time. If I could bundle up this feeling of the presence that I have in my meditation and send it to you so that you could open it and drink it in and feel it, well, I think you all know I would do it. But I haven't found a way to do that. As much as I love you, I can't do that. The best that I can do is say, here, look, do this. You see what he's saying? Try this. Sit back. Take that rest. Have that Sabbath. Keep at it. Come on. Until you write me and say, ah, I know the experience of the Spirit flooding in. So that's the wish I have for you. and may that Spirit be upon you even now. Thank you.